Good afternoon, Kansas City. How are we doing today? Well, we are so excited to have a great welcome for the President of the United States and a great welcome here at the KCATA. Let me start by giving a good shout out to my friend Robbie Mackinnon and all those here at the KCATA who do wonderful work. Now, sometimes life comes full circle. About 30 years ago, there was a Kansas City woman whose family moved a lot, but lived primarily on Kansas City's east side. She had three kids within 5 years of age and got them around and herself around on the bus, riding to work each and every day. The waits could be long on a cold day. The quarters it cost to ride at the time could add up to taking food off of that kid's table. But she kept riding to build opportunities for herself and her family. That woman was my mother. That family was my family. But that story is just one story of hardworking American families in Kansas City, in the suburbs, in the country, and in every state. Infrastructure, you see, isn't about objects, it's about people. The Kansas Cityan looking to find the job that helps them reach the middle class. The Missourian who is looking for access to the skills they need to be competitive in the next generation. And the president's bill, supported by my congressman and forever my mayor, supported by a congresswoman who knows the story of a hardworking mom who always believed in her, even when others may not, and supported by a bipartisan consensus of Americans across the country, will launch more success stories, build more good-paying union jobs, and will help us build that better life for all Americans, no matter where they're from or where they start. I'm proud to stand here today with my congresspersons. We're proud to stand here with the president. And I'll note here in Kansas City, I'm honored mostly today to talk about a city that is leading on zero fare and reduced emissions public transportation. In early 2020, Kansas City became the first major American city to implement a permanent zero-fare transit initiative, making all public transit fare-free and putting thousands of dollars, $2,000 per person, back into the pockets of hardworking men and women in Kansas City. And during the pandemic, we never gave up on our public transit system. And importantly, we never gave up on the riders, like my mother those years before, like the essential workers who are going to work each day. And this is the type of transformative work that we're talking about when we say infrastructure is about equity, it's about jobs, it's about connectivity, it's about opportunities. America's mayors, America's congresspeople, and so many others are committed to ensuring these dollars translate into action, lifting up communities where government commitment will now and finally match the hope and opportunity in all people's hearts. Kansas City, the country's eyes are on us, and we will continue to showcase what it means to be a city committed to equitable service delivery and committed to working for all folks in all neighborhoods. Now, I know the president has an appointment at some point with Kansas City Barbecue, so I'll keep us moving along. I have to recognize just a few other folks. Every sign today was printed in-house in Kansas City, Missouri, with good union labor of Local 500, and I'd like to thank everybody in Public Works, KCATA, Fire Department, the Police Department, every worker in Kansas City. Let's give them a round of applause as well. So we'll look forward to a continuing partnership with the president. We'll look forward to a continuing partnership as we implement these important dollars. And importantly, as we work to get Build Back Better across the finish line. We look forward to having the president back for more celebration. But more than anything, I want to say God bless you all this holiday season. Thank you all for being part of this implementation. And let's have a wonderful time welcoming the president. I want to make sure now that I turn it over to somebody who's very special to me. Somebody I met in school some years ago and somebody who was a star then and whose star has continued to rise. An outstanding representative for the people of Northeast Kansas and I will say for the people of America. Ladies and gentlemen, Congresswoman Therese Davis.
Good afternoon. I don't know if you... I thought there would be a little box. Well, good afternoon, everyone. I'm Charisse Davids. I represent the Kansas 3rd Congressional District. Thank you all so much for being here. Thank you all so much for the work that you do, because I know that this microphone is... Okay. I know that all of you are here because we get to talk about two of my favorite things today. Infrastructure. And making sure that there are more opportunities for the Kansas City metro area. And I am so proud and lucky to be joining Mayor Lucas, Congressman Emanuel Cleaver, and the President of the United States as we talk about the way that this infrastructure bill is going to have a positive impact on our country, on our children, our grandchildren, and future generations. I'm grateful that we get to work together across state lines to help this region thrive. We're talking about making sure that from bridges to broadband, we're continuing to create opportunities and connect our cities, because that's what this is about. Because as Mayor Lucas said, building infrastructure, addressing infrastructure needs is so much more than the physical stuff. It's, of course, our roads, our bridges, and even broadband. It's infrastructure is everyday systems that help us get to where we need to go, that keep us healthy, get us to places of recreation, get us to our jobs. And I know that when we're talking about this stuff, whether it's safety on a highway like Highway 69 or access to high-speed internet in all areas across Kansas and Missouri, both urban and rural, if we aren't investing in those systems, we're going to pay the price. And it's not just potholes and longer bus stop waits, but those are, I know folks have felt those. So, but it's not just that. It's the impact that we feel when decades of underinvestment happen on our economy. And right now, we're in the middle of addressing a huge economic crisis that was brought on by a generational pandemic. And I know it's been hard, so I really appreciate all of you who I know are some of our frontline workers, folks who have literally kept our cities moving. So thank you all so much for the work that you've been doing around that. It's time to stop just kind of repairing our grandparents' infrastructure. It's time to start innovating. It's time to start championing innovations that are going to make a great economy for our future generations, for our grandchildren and our great-grandchildren. I, of course, have to bring up fellow Kansan, President Eisenhower, who knew a thing or two about bringing an economy back by investing in infrastructure. We get to do that here and now. This is the opportunity we have in front of us. We have a president who has taken that head on. We have congressmen and women and people like Congressman Cleaver. We have mayors like Quentin Lucas and folks all across this country who know that this is our opportunity, and we're taking it. We passed this bill in a bipartisan way because this infrastructure and some of these kitchen table issues are not partisan. These are the things that our country needs so that we can move on, so we can make progress. And I'm excited about the billions of dollars that are coming to our region. And I'm proud to work with the folks who are here today, so many of you, and of course, Congressman Cleaver and I, who are always meeting and FaceTiming about this stuff. Thank you so much. I do want to take a minute to say, Congressman Cleaver is not only my friend, he's my mentor. He is a leader in the U.S. House that is beyond compare. I feel fortunate that we get to have him as our representative in this district. And, well, you know what I mean, in this region. I'm like, he's... And I cannot, there's a spider on the podium. This happened at the last infrastructure. I'm not kidding. I'm so sorry. Cleaver has saved my life once again. I will turn it over to Congressman Emanuel Cleaver.
actually do know how to FaceTime. I know my children wouldn't believe it, but I do. it's been just about a year ago, back in February of last year, when Senator, Secretary of State, Ambassador John Kerry and I rode from one end of Iowa to the other, campaigning on a blue bus for Joe Biden. In Cedar Rapids, Iowa, a person asked me, I won't give the name, why would you endorse Biden this early? And it was clear then, and it's clearer now. I explained that when I was mayor, I was waiting for the infrastructure ship to come in, year after year after year after year. And then I went to Congress waiting for the infrastructure ship to come in, year after year after year. And I knew, based on how he campaigned, that infrastructure was going to be something that a President Joe Biden would push and get through. And I also realized that one of the ways to get that ship in is to swim out and help pull it ashore. And that's what I did in Congress, along with Sharice Davids, help pull it ashore. Even though I had to stand alone in Missouri as the only person from Missouri in the House to vote for this. And I'm proud, it's one of the proudest votes I've ever taken. And I... And so all I want you to understand, the people who are here, and I want you to tell everybody you know, ladies and gentlemen, this is a big working deal. Thank you.
Please. Please welcome the President of the United States, Joe Biden.
Good afternoon. I'm S.Q. Jackson, a proud member of ATU 1287 here in Kansas City. I'm so honored to stand here on behalf of more than 600 members of our local and international President John Costa to introduce President Joe Biden, a man who is delivering on his promise to get things done in Washington. The president did exactly what he said he would do. He reached across the aisle, worked with the other side, and got a deal done. And this is going to be a big deal, especially here in Kansas City. Our infrastructure is crumbling, and it's not just our roads and bridges, it's about public transit. I've been a transit operator here for 6 years, but the long hours became too much. I have 3 children aged 5, 6, and 12, and needed to be home more, so I recently transferred to maintenance department, where I could work 8 hours, go home for baseball games, basketball games, and just be a dad. We have 2 electric buses here at the KCATA, and with the infrastructure bill, I'm sure we'll be getting many more. Soon our entire fleet will be electric, and I want to ensure that I have the skill set to fix and maintain these vehicles. Thankfully, thanks to the Biden team, the bill sets aside $500 million for training. The transit systems must use this money for workforce development for people like me. It's a really big deal. But that's what you'd expect from the most pro-labor, pro-transit president in American history. Since January, he's brought hope, compassion, and leadership to the White House. He brought America back just in time. Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome the President of the United States and former school bus driver, Joe Biden.
Well, I tell you what, I don't know where that phrase, it's a big deal, came from. If anybody remembers that, which you seem to all remember, after the president spoke, and I spoke after, but I, then President Obama, he was back to my right. And I went back and I made sure I was talking on his left ear because it was all he was down the hallway. And I whispered what I said. How in God's name anybody heard it, I have no idea. And I shouldn't waste your time and tell you this, but we were going to go from there over the Department of Transportation. No, excuse me, Department of Education. And I walked out the back and got in a presidential limo on the driver's side, in the back seat. The president, he was already in there, and he was laughing like the devil. He was almost hysterical. I said, what's so damn funny? And he told me. And I said, you're just lucky my mother's not alive. I'd be one dead man. Look, before I begin, I'd like to say a word about a friend of mine who we lost this weekend. Man, a few hours west of Russell, Kansas, came from an hour not far from here, Russell, Kansas. A lot of Americans today remember Bob Dole as a presidential candidate. But for families he represented across the border, he represented Kansas for 36 years. And for those like me who had the honor of calling him a friend, Bob Dole was an American giant, a man of extraordinary courage, both physical and moral courage, a war hero who sacrificed beyond measure, who nearly gave his life for our country in World War II, among the greatest of the great generation, a leader of honesty, decency, and good humor. The same qualities that made him such a cherished friend to me and my wife, Jill, and so many others through the years. We didn't agree on everything, but I always admired and respected him and his willingness to work with anyone, any party, when it mattered most. And our nation owes Bob Dole a debt of gratitude for the remarkable service and a life well lived. And being here this week reminds me of another great American giant, or rather an American monarch, Buck O'Neill, the Kansas City Monarch. A great ball player, the first black coach in the majors, one of the game's greatest ambassadors, and finally, a Hall of Famer. Now, if the sun's shining a little brighter on Kansas City this week, it's because Bob and Buck are up there sharing a laugh with one another. I also want to acknowledge Mayor Quentin Lucas. Mayor Q, you've done an amazing job, both in terms of economic justice as well as economic progress. And I want to County Executive Frank Wright. He lived the life I'd hoped to live. He started off as a laborer. He helped build the Royal Stadium. As a player, he's one of the best ever play there. And now he's a county executive in Jackson County, resident and a business as well. You know, I mean, this guy's done it all. I thought maybe I could make him the pros, but look what the hell. I actually was foolish enough to ask Floyd Little whether he could get his, he was a friend of mine in Syracuse, if he could get his agent to see if I could walk on. You know, every year they allow 50 folks to walk on. Well, guess what? He said, he came back to me laughing. He said, my agent said they're afraid if they let you walk on, they'd have to just carry you off. Look, the infrastructure law I signed Thanksgiving would not be possible, and this is not hyperbole, without the leaders here today. Congressman Manuel Cleaver was a great mayor, a significant leader in the House. Before he's both those things, he was a pastor. And he saw a highway cut through the neighborhood many of his congregants call home. So he knows that we need to build our infrastructure the right way, not just build it, but build it the right way. He also is a big reason Kansas City is adding electric buses to its fleet. Zero fare, zero emissions. Congressman, great idea. Great idea. Congresswoman Sharice Davids, there is no stronger advocate for infrastructure investment in the United States Congress that I've ever met anyway. And as vice chair of the House Transportation Infrastructure Committee, your leadership was key in getting this passed. So I want to thank you. There you are. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. And I also want to thank somebody else, Roy Blunt. He couldn't be here today, but he was an important part of the bipartisan effort to get the infrastructure passed. And that's what this we're here about. We're here talking about rebuilding America, investing in America, building a better America. In the coming weeks, I'm going to be traveling all over the country, and so will Vice President Harris, my cabinet, and folks throughout our administration. Our Building a Better America tour is going to give us a chance to meet people where they work, and hear what the communities that they live in, what they need, hear firsthand. and showcase how our bipartisan infrastructure law, which has changed their lives for the better, came about because we worked together. We can learn more about this law and what it means for your community. Go to build.gov. Look, the better part of the 20th century, we led the world by a significant margin in our willingness to invest in ourselves. We invested in our infrastructure. We invested in research and development, in our roads, highways, bridges, ports, airports. The arteries of the nation allow commerce to function smoothly and move swiftly. And we invested in our people. We gave opportunity. We're among the first to provide access to universal education and high school education in the beginning of the 20th century, which put us in the forefront of leading the rest of the world. We invested to win the space race, and we won it. We led the world in research and development, led the creation of the internet. But we know that China and the rest of the world are catching up, and in some respects, actually moving beyond us. We're also going to reinvest in our country and our people to reclaim our leadership to create millions of jobs by building a better America with the best infrastructure in the world, built overwhelmingly with prevailing wage union. There's a lot of good and decent people in the finance industry, but they didn't build the middle class. Unions built the middle class. No, not a joke, not a political statement. It's a reality. It's a reality. And look, this infrastructure bill, which without the union's support behind me to get this done, would have never gotten done. It starts with the most significant investment in roads and bridges in America in 70 years. Fixing many of those 3,500 bridges, nearly 10,000 miles of roads in Kansas and Missouri in poor condition. Like the Central Avenue Bridge, which was closed earlier this year for fear of failure. A similar bridge not far from here going to Kentucky, there was fear of failure, and it collapsed, killing a whole heck of a lot of people. But this created a whole lot of headaches, wasted time for 8,500 people who used to drive it every single day. The decaying roads cost Missouri and Kansas drivers more than $500 per person per year, the drivers, and additional gas and repairs and longer commute times, and more than $500 in hidden tax on Kansas and Missouri families. And speaking of the cost of living, 2 weeks ago, I announced the largest ever release of the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve to increase the supply of oil to help bring down prices. And I met with our friends around the world. Other countries joined us. And those savings are starting to reach drivers now. Today, the average price you're paying here in Kansas City is below $2 a gallon, $3 a gallon. It's down to $2.90 a gallon, 20% down from cents from a month ago. Nationally, prices are down 7 cents a gallon and continuing to fall. We're making progress. We're going to keep at it to ensure the American people are paying their fair share for gas, not being gouged for gas. And look, as Manuel said, we're in a situation where we've known that our infrastructure had problems for a long, long time. I don't think I could take one more phrase that's going to be infrastructure week. But guess what? It's going to be infrastructure decade now, man. No more talking. Action. The law also includes the most significant investment in passenger rail in 50 years. $66 billion for passenger and freight rail. You know, I was talking with members about improving cross-state interstate passenger rail, something I know a little about. I've been doing it for a long time. You know, the fact is that you're looking at Mr. Amtrak here. I've traveled over It's God's truth. I've traveled over 1,250,000 miles on Amtrak. Everybody thought that, anyway, because I went home every single night after my wife and daughter were killed because I couldn't afford a home in Delaware and in Washington. So I commuted every day. I remember one day, as vice president, the government keeps fastidious records of how many miles you travel on government planes. And so there's a big headline. Biden travels, I forget what it was, 1,000,000 miles on Air Force Two and so on and so forth. And I'm getting on the train to go home, which the Secret Service, they're great. They're with me here today, all 800 of you. But all kidding aside, they're wonderful. And I was getting on the train because they didn't like me getting on the train, Congressman, because it's more dangerous circumstance. You can stop people from things on tracks, et cetera. But I would go going home to see my mom, who was sick. And one of the conductors I know for years walked up and grabbed, said, "Joey, baby," grabbed my cheek. And not a joke. And I thought that he was going to get shot. True story. And I said, "No, it's okay. We've known each other." He said, "Joey, big deal. 1,000,000 miles, wherever it was, 1,000,000 miles on Air Force Two. Come on, Joey. You know how many miles you travel on Amtrak?" I said, "No, Angie, I don't know how many miles." He said, we calculated it at the retirement dinner. He said, 36 years, 119 days a year, back and forth. Then as vice president, he said, "We figure you've done X number of trips. It adds up to 1,200,000 miles on Amtrak." And I said, "If my dad were here, he'd call it a misspent adulthood." But all kidding aside, you know, back in the early 70s, probably 74, I think it was, there was a guy named Charlie Wheeler talked about this, your mayor. Seriously. And there's no reason why it should be 2 hours faster to drive from Kansas City to St. Louis than take a train. No reason. All the data shows that if you get from point A to point B at a faster rate by rail than by automobile, you'll take the rail. And guess what that does? First of all, it's safer. But secondly, it's going to save over time millions of barrels of oil. Millions of barrels of oil because it's electric. Look, folks, we're the largest investment in public transit ever in this legislation. Imagine replacing buses that are past their useful life, switching from diesel to electric, getting more people where they're trying to go more safely, faster, cleaner, like what you're doing here with your zero fare and zero emission buses. Electric buses, you add into the fleet, it's a win-win-win. They're manufactured here in America, creating good union jobs. They're good for the environment. And they're making them free for all riders. Mayor, you're helping regular riders save about $2,000 a year. That's a big deal for someone making 50, 60 grand a year. An infrastructure law means more projects like the extension of the Kansas City streetcar. So you can connect Union Station with UMKC and everything in between. It means students can easily get to internships and jobs in downtown core. It means families can get to restaurants, stores, the plaza, to read the riverfront, to catch the Kansas City Current game at the new stadium, the first stadium, by the way, I might specifically point out, specifically built for women's soccer. I was able to see them win the Olympics. Anyway, it's a long story, but it means more jobs. Opportunity, economic development. The law invests $42 billion to modernize our ports and airports in America. Like the new terminal you're building in Kansas City International, or improvements to the island port in the Missouri River, helping get agricultural products from the Midwest to the rest of the nation. And this bill has $16 billion in it to improve ports like yours. These investments make it easier, easy for companies to get their goods to market, reducing supply chain bottlenecks, lowering costs for families. Here in Kansas City, the possibilities are unlimited. You got the fastest growing port in the Midwest, here in the heart of the heartland, for freight rail, for transforming your airport. You're building a national hub. Create a cycle of jobs and growth that will be felt for decades, making the right investments. And you have the money to do it now. Of course, that's not all the law achieves. Under the leadership of mayors like, our mayor here, KC Water has going to replace all known service lines in Kansas City, but there's more work to be done in the region. The law starts by replacing all 100% of the nation's lead pipes and service lines so every child in Missouri and Kansas and across America can turn on that faucet. In the 4,000 schools, you can't do it, 44,000, I should say, and drink clean, decent water. You're going to need tens of thousands of plumbers and pipe fitters making a union wage to undo this. You get paid a prevailing wage with benefits, the ability to build a middle-class life. I grew up like a lot of you did. I grew up in a nice three-bedroom split-level home in a development of about 70 other homes like it, with four kids and a grandpa living with us. But I remember every time something would happen. My dad, I remember when he lost his health insurance, his company. You could tell the walls were thin, how upset he was that night, just rolling in bed. He said, we don't have health insurance for a while, honey. Well, my dad used to say, everybody deserves just a little bit of breathing room. A little bit of breathing room. This law is going to make high-speed internet affordable and available everywhere in America, creating jobs, deploying those broadband lines. Across the high-speed internet, access to high-speed internet unlocks opportunity everywhere. It allows farmers in Kansas to use precision agriculture to improve their yields, or a doctor in St. Louis to have a remote checkup with a homebound cancer patient. Today, roughly one of every four Missourians and one out of every six in Kansas don't have high-speed internet in their home. In some places, there's no broadband infrastructure at all. This law will make high-speed internet affordable and available everywhere in Missouri and Kansas, urban, suburban, and rural. In the 21st century in America, no parent should have to do what many had to do last semester, and that is sit in the parking lot of a fast food restaurant so their children could use the internet to get their homework done. This is the United States of America, for God's sake. This law also builds out a resilience against extreme weather events fueled by climate change. Nationally, last year, extreme weather events cost this country $99 billion. And I toured most of it. I was out in California. You know, more forests burned to the ground, than the entire square mileage of the state of New Jersey from the Cape all the way up to New York City, Long Island. That's how much we lost. And it goes on. Missouri and Kansas are no strangers to these effects. In fact, Missouri and Kansas were both in the top 10 states in the U.S. last year for power outages. Then Texas saw the massive blackouts last winter. Because you're on the Southwest power grid, you lost power too. This summer, you saw heavy storms close roads in Waverly, Kansas, cause flooding in St. Joseph to Columbia to Jefferson City. And when you think about the impact of more intense weather, more severe storms, none of us are ever going to forget the devastation in Joplin. In 2014, I went there to help reopen the rebuilt Joplin High School. We never break. We never stop. We Americans always rebuild. And we will rebuild this country. And this law builds back our bridges, our water systems, our power lines, electric grids, better, stronger, and more resistant to the negative effects of climate change. Because, by the way, it used to be, as the elected officials here can tell you, if you had storm damage and you qualified for federal aid, You got them just enough amount of damn of money to get you back to exactly what it looked like before. But you can't do that because now that highway gets flooded out. It's never going to go back to less rain because of global warming. Pray God it won't get worse. So you got to build that highway a couple feet higher. It costs more money. You got to build back better. There's so much more in this law. Most of all, the law does something truly historic. The law helps rebuild what I, when I announced for office, I said I was running for three reasons. One, to restore the soul of this country, a sense of decency and honor. Two, to rebuild the backbone of this country, working class and hardworking middle class people. That's the backbone of this country. And thirdly, to unite the country, which is turning out to be one of the most difficult things, but we're going to get it done. Look, the fact of the matter is that we've been able to do an awful lot. We built America, and we've left behind so much for so long. We're going to help rebuild the economy, this time from the bottom up and the middle out. You know, a blue collar, this bill is a blue-collar blueprint for working Americans. 95% of the jobs created in the infrastructure bill don't require a college education. The only way this works is blue-collar Americans do the building. And the only way it ever worked, we're going to do it again. Mark my words, we're going to do this again. And the same goes my plan to build back better for our people. This bill is going to deliver, for example, universal pre-K for every 3- and 4-year-old in America. The great universities have done a lot of studies on this in the last decade. One study shows that low-income children from poor homes participating in preschool are 47% more likely to go on to earn an associate's degree or higher after high school. They start off at a great disadvantage because their mom or their dad, their single parent, doesn't have the education, doesn't have the training. But at 3 years old, the brain is rapidly developing so quickly, it matters. We have to build that foundation for the future for success. My wife, Jill, is a full-time teacher. And, you know, she says any nation that out-educates us is going to out-compete us. It's simply a fact. And guess what? Hold it here. Every nation of the 38 most advanced nations, we rank 34 in the world. 34 in the world in early education for children. The United States of America. My Build Back Better plan, which is passed in the House of Representatives, thanks to my two colleagues here today. Representatives will also ensure that parents can afford child care. Child care gets workers the raise, and child care workers get a raise they deserve. Folks, look, in Missouri and Kansas, the average annual cost to send a toddler to child care is $6,500 a year. If you live in Chicago, it's more like $22,000 a year per child, okay? It means that the average family with two young children is spending roughly 20% of their after-tax income on child care. $20 out of every $100 they have. Our Build Back Better bill is going to make a giant difference in life because your child care cost will be capped at 7% of your income. Period. That's 7% of your income. It's going to make a huge difference in millions of workers who've had to drop out of the workforce, not because they didn't want to work, but because they couldn't find affordable care. Look at all the women who are totally qualified, who had to drop out of the workforce because they can't afford the child care and still work. Look, folks, you know, it's not the same, but I started about commuting. One of the reasons I started commuting was when I got elected, my family was killed. My wife and daughter were killed. I couldn't afford to leave Delaware because I had a sister, my best friend, my brother, my mother, my father helped me raise my kids. I was making good money. I was making $42,000 a year as a senator. I could no more afford full-time child care than fly. We're going to make college more affordable. Right now, the cost of a 2-year degree in Missouri is over $4,000 a year. In Kansas, it's over $3,000 a year. There are about 140,000 students in these two states that rely on what we call Pell Grants. They make less than 50 grand a year Pell Grants to help cover the cost. This plan I have also is going to increase Pell Grants by $550 a year. It makes it easier to stay in school. It makes a big difference. We're also going to lower prescription drug prices. This week, I spoke to a young woman who told me the cost of insulin for her diabetes, she has type 1 diabetes, meant having to choose between rent, groceries, and medication. She said, relentlessly, without relief every day. So she couldn't do it. So she began to ration her supply of insulin. She ended up in a coma and almost died. Think about that. The difference between nearly dying and thriving is the cost of one drug that cost $10 to make years ago. Nothing's changing it. That can cost consumers now $1,000 a month. Well, so if you're one of those Americans who are paying too much for insulin, my Build Back Better plan is going to change that too, because you're going to guarantee you pay no more than $35 a month. It'd be different if they invested another $1,500 in research. They did nothing. Change it. They'll make sure parents of the 200,000 children in America with type 1 diabetes have the ability, to parent to have the ability to say to a child, honey, it's going to be okay. Can you imagine the dignity you'll be deprived of as a parent knowing your child has type 1 diabetes and you can't afford their insulin? You can't afford it because you don't have insurance and your state doesn't have Medicare. Look, it's all about what working and middle-class people have to pay to get by, to get ahead, to get, as my dad said, that little bit of breathing room. My whole plan is designed to bring down the cost you face. For example, lower costs for childcare, making you don't pay more than 7% of your income, means a family making $50,000 a year will save $3,000 a year on child costs. Lowering the cost of prescription drugs, making sure you pay no more than $35 a month, for instance, not $1,000 a month. Saving $600 per person per year for health care premiums. The list goes on. Elder care, housing, meeting the moment of climate change. That's what this plan does. All in, a study found that my plan would mean the equivalent of $7,400 in tax cuts and savings for the typical family of four with two kids. And guess what? Let's talk about inflation. It's real. There's inflation. But 17 Nobel winners of the economics have written a letter just about 3 weeks ago to me affirming that this bill would ease long-term inflationary pressures in the economy. Two of the leading rating agencies in the world, the Wall Street Journal, confirmed my plans do not add to inflationary pressures. Not liberal think tanks, Wall Street. Moody's, and anyway, look, I have also proposed, what I proposed is in a way to lower some of the difficult costs families have to pay every month by asking corporations and the wealthiest Americans to pay their fair share for change. Look, everybody talks about the price tag for this legislation, $1,750,000,000,000. It will not cost the taxpayers a penny. If you're making less than 400 grand a year, you're not going to have your taxes go up one single penny, not a cent. And guess what else? It also means that there is no increase in your taxes, and people are going to just pay a fair share. For example, there are 50 corporations in America the last 3 years, of the Fortune 500, that made $40 billion, that didn't pay one single solitary penny, not one single penny in taxes. Come on, folks. It used to be during the last Bush administration, the top rate for the top 1% paid 37.5%. It got lowered to 36%. It doesn't have any impact. It just means whether or not they're going to have an extra swimming pool, the extra home. But all kidding aside, if you just take it from down to from 36 back up to 37.5, it pays for every bit of preschool, and it pays for every bit of what we're talking about in terms of insulin. Now, what's better for American corporations? What's better for the wealthy? For a healthier nation, everybody being better educated, or having that extra amount of money that they already have a great deal of? I'm a capitalist. I always have, I have a good friend of Bernie's, but we disagree. I'm not a socialist. I'm a capitalist. You should be able to make a million or 100 million bucks if you can. But pay your fair share. Folks, look, there's so much we can do, so many things that are within our power. If you went to the average American family making 60 to 70 grand, or you went to a family where dad was a teacher and mom was a police officer, they're making 120. They're paying at a higher tax rate than someone making $1 trillion. I mean, $1 billion. For real. How can that be fair? Look, one of the reasons I feel so firmly in the proposals is because I know what this country can be. We've always been a nation of possibilities. We didn't become this nation by thinking small. We've always thought big. Throughout our history, we've emerged from crisis by investing in ourselves, in our people. During the Civil War, before it was over, Lincoln started to build the Transcontinental Railroad. It was built at the end of and during the Civil War. During the Cold War, Eisenhower built the interstate highway system, transforming the way Americans lived. And now we're at work beginning and building an economy of the 21st century to build a better America. I truly believe, and I promise you this, I believe that 50 years from now, when historians look back on this moment, they're going to say this was the moment that America won the competition for the 21st century. Think about it. Most of you who are over 40 remember us always having the number one infrastructure in the world, the most best education, et cetera. We rank now number 8 in the world in terms of investment, research and development. 14th in infrastructure. The United States of America. And if you're a businessman out there, or you work, or you're a labor, a union person working for a business, where's the business going to go? Where they can get the products to market fastest, safest, where they have access to get in and out, where they have access to move. That's why we're losing. That's why we're losing. But we're not going to lose anymore. I promise you. The time of losing is over. It's over, 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 over. God bless you all, and may God protect our troops. Thank you for your patience. I appreciate it. Thank you. Thank you.